Hi, this is Mike Howe from Metal Church, and I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Studios in Houston, Texas. You're listening to the Right to Rock podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now, get ready for two guys that are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Rackman!
To get this shoehorn out of my shoe.
What are you, high?
A little bit.
So what? What's the deal? You want to fight about it?
Yeah. You know what my real fucking problem is? Every time we start a show, the video's on pause.
Hey, I didn't hire the motherfucker, you did.
John! You seen John tonight?
No.
I didn't either.
John! I'll push the button if the motherfucker can do it. No, fuck me. All right, then. Here, I'll press the remote.
Hey, Jack. He's in Australia.
Cool. Lucky us.
Do you have his itinerary?
Jesus Christ. You're so fucking... That's fucking fantastic.
Hello, how you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing, guys? What
are
y'all doing down there?
This is, we're doing a show. What are you doing here?
You know how it is. I just passed by, you know, on the coup. And I saw the Nuts song, and, you know, I
All right. It's nice to hear from you, bro.
Yeah, you and Chaz and fucking... Why'd y'all bring pebbles?
Hey, I don't think this motherfucker. I don't know how, Daddy. When I came in the door, I was waiting for somebody to come outside. And then I'm like, sleeping, you know, right behind him.
On the down low.
And then I turned around, the little fucker's right behind me. I don't know how I got in here.
That's fucking great. So clearly our security's on the up.
Hey, Elmo, do you know where John is?
No, I don't got no idea. Why are you asking me? Do I look like I know that motherfucker? I do everything I can to avoid that motherfucker. He's stupid.
I bet you fucking Elmo's a huge NWA fan.
I bet he is, dude.
He's straight, yeah.
He's totally straight, dude.
Hey, Chaz, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I got the penis. And I'm gay.
Why do you sound like Pimple?
Exactly.
That's weird.
I was impersonating Chaz.
Jesus.
He's taking a leak.
Can we start the video, please? Press the big red button up there.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know what to do. It's been a while, Doc. I thought you didn't bring me back.
Oh, I didn't authorize this, did you?
I don't authorize half the shit that goes on around here.
Is McCheese here?
He's a guy doing Japan.
I thought you said they were in Australia.
Yeah, what the fuck?
New Zealand.
Okay, whatever. Can we start the fucking video and get this show going?
I need that one.
This is why I fucking support
why do we even
the right to bear arms.
Oh, there we go. What do we got here,
President? I don't know. It's looking pretty fucking sweet. Is this the Slash video?
Roxy over there.
All right.
We're watching, I think, Slash and Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators live at the Roxy.
Nice.
5:14.
Nice.
Okay, let's. We've had the debate over Slash I don't know how many times, right?
Right.
This sucks, you know?
How he's a big fat fuck with his stupid hat on.
Should we talk about Slash or Salt?
We should talk about Guns N' Roses.
Or...
No, I don't want to get, like, race baiting or something.
You know who that is, right?
What?
Saul Hudson?
Yeah, Slash's real name, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know that. Don't worry.
Oh, you're a bum.
You're a bum. That's all you'll ever be. About
what? I'm a huge Miles Kennedy.
I know, dude. You always trip on this dude.
Dude's got some fucking vocals.
I'm hip.
And I hear he's equally a fucking awesome guitar player.
Oh, is he really?
Oh, yeah.
He's all just shredding up the fucking place.
With the Alter Rich, Tremonti's like, go after it, bro. He's not like, so I don't think I want you to play guitar, right?
I said, I don't think I want to be in a...
staging me, right?
And I don't think I want to play in a band if someone calls me bro.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Does he play with Slash at all? Or do you know?
Miles? I don't think so.
You know, he plays with Tremonti.
Right.
And I bring it back to one other great guitar player that let a singer come in and play guitar. Right. Eddie Van Halen.
No.
Van Halen. Sammy Hagar.
Well.
Sammy Hagar's not a great guitar player. He's a good guitar. Good guitar player, though, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But like we talked about on a previous episode, there's also, you told me, David Lee Roth. Is looking John to get Fine. Shit going again, right?
John Fine. And he's still in Van Halen that I know of.
Today.
Sammy tweeted Eddie and Eddie tweeted back and they're like talking again. So speculation is Van Hagar back.
Hey, why not?
I'd rather keep the Van... Dude, I saw Van Halen last summer. They were awesome.
I thought you said... But you said Dave always does that. That's sort of his shtick, huh?
Well, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Dave was off last year. The time I'd see him on the reunion, I guess he was more hungry because he needs some food on that table.
Right, so you need to make sure he had all his mind and his P's and Q's.
Better than Eddie Bonnell's in the band. He made
wow.
The show. But Eddie stole the show last year.
That's good. That's the thing. Even if David was absolutely on top in perfect form, if Eddie wasn't on, I would feel less than satisfied. Yeah, exactly.
I left disappointed. Last year, Eddie was totally on. Dave wasn't bad. He just wasn't like he was when I saw him previously.
Right.
But I left the show saying, wow, that was worth the shitload of money I just paid to come in here.
All right, okay. Fair enough. Well, shall we?
So what, have you gotten into any of the Slash solo stuff?
Nope.
Really, nothing?
Nope.
You're not even hesitating?
No, because I honestly haven't listened to any of his solo stuff. I know that first solo album had fucking everybody and their dog on it, but it wasn't really like hard rock. It was like a bunch of like pop people, and maybe
Ozzy was on there, Lemmy was on there.
Then maybe I'm thinking of the second one. There was one that had like fucking not Taylor Swift, but you know what I mean. These kind of people are like, yeah, shit like that. Where I'm like, what the fuck? That was that same album. Oh, so really? What? See, I don't dig those kind of albums, man. I don't listen to shit like that.
Once he hooked up with Miles Kennedy, his music got back.
Which was his second album, right? Second solo album? Or is this
way further down the line?
Oh, so how many solo albums has he done? I thought he only done like two or three.
Well, he had Slash's Snake Pit.
No, I mean Slash as Slash. Oh, he's doing a Guns N' Roses song, right?
No. I don't know. I think they need to get Miles Kennedy to sing for Guns N' Roses. Well, we'll get on to that here in a little bit.
Alright.
Anyway, I tell you what, let's play something off Slash's last record with that he did with Miles. Miles gets second billing, but I don't know why.
Fair enough.
It's just me talking, right?
Yes, clearly.
Who am I?
No.
This fucking bald fat guy. The record was called World on Fire, and it featured Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, which is...
Which, who cares, right?
L.A. guys have been around for a while, but whatever.
Right.
They don't have the name.
Exactly. It's all good. Miles guys. Oh, they're getting paid just because they're working with Slash and Miles.
I tell you what, let's check out Bent to Fly. Get into a major conversation.
Yeah?
There's something that's very, very important to me.
What's that?
Four letters.
Beer?
Beer.
You gonna drink some beer?
Beer. Let's do it.
Sang half the song right there.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Damn, that was nice.
All right, you guys are alright.
You kids got talent.
Otherwise, he's probably getting interviewed by some other shitty podcast, and he's like the friend of that show, and he tells him, like, these other guys I talk to, they're fucking idiots.
They're fucking bunch of jerks.
I know. You guys at least know shit.
Jerk off.
And he did. One day he slips up, doesn't keep track of which one he's talking to. Yeah, you two dickheads, y'all are as bad as Alan and this. Oh, you are Alan. I meant you guys are the best.
Yes,
like
you
this
are
fucker
awesome.
Right here. Well, this one I'm excited about because this one is from Carbach, which is a local brewer we're always fucking happy to hear from. Those guys are great. And this one is, I've never had it before, but I like the sound of it. This is from the Carbach Brewing Company's limited edition. We have the number 013, number 13, Kentucky Habit. Now, this sucker is a Belgian quadruple aged in bourbon barrels. Now, I know that's all the fucking rage.
Oh, yeah.
Every beer company who has a fucking sign is saying, let's put shit in fucking barrels and age that shit forever. To varying degrees of success. I mean, some people are just hopping on the bandwagon. But every now and then you get these guys that really know what they're doing and really lend a new aspect to the beer that did not have before. This one in particular, like we said, is called the Kentucky Habit. And let me just read to you what it says off the side of the bottle.
No, you don't.
So this one says here, it sure is quiet around this here priory. You could hear a caterpillar sneaking across a moss bed in tennis shoes. But no vow of silence can keep you quiet once you take a sip of this here Kentucky Habit. This Belgian-style quadruple is brewed with cane sugar, the finest specialty malts, and fermented with that spicy phenolic Belgian yeast. Locked away for months to age in Louisville's finest bourbon barrels, it's sure to tickle your fancy. Notes of fig, plum, raisin, and vanilla swirl around on the palate like a dust devil spinning through western Kentucky. So come, sit a spell, and relax. Drink in the divine flavors of Kentucky Habit and receive total consciousness. It's fucking good. So I'm pretty excited. Let's check this out.
If I had blood dug in my penis right now, I would be hard.
That's fantastic. So what do you say this does on the color scale? I mean, it's pretty fucking dark, man. Even with the monkey lamp, you can hardly see through this shit.
A little disturbed, but yes, it's very dark.
Nice lacing, though. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, taller.
That's beautiful. Kind of a sudsy lacing.
It's impressive for Carbach. They have never done anything. Buffalo Bayou's done stuff like this locally, but not Carbach. They haven't taken that extra step out.
It is good to hear. Yeah, it's nice to see him branching out into something a little more exotic and traditional. Let's see what we got here. We got... sorry, I'm getting into this, the about here, because I don't know where... I know they're near Houston. Are they in Katy?
They're in Houston. Somewhere.
Are they?
Yeah. This area. They're in the Houston area.
Oh, okay.
No,
Katy. Oh, okay. That's what I was saying. Okay. Well, anyway, so one thing I want to mention is if you go to the website and look at Carbach, they have their whole fucking company up on the website. Like, everybody who works at the company is up here on the website. And they got a lot of funny people in administrative. And we got people in production.
The dude from Doug Dynasty.
No shit, it looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hayden Hyde, he's mostly harmless. We got Marlia Pena, the lab staff. We got this motherfucker. Looks like he's had way too much beer. Nathan Schnellenberger, we salute you. He's the hose master, bro. This motherfucker's just got a big monkey wrench. He's with the Fix-It crew. That's quite the motley crew of people.
Yeah, tell him.
So in any case, what's important is these guys are local. We love local guys. They're right off Carbach Street here in Houston. So I think that's where they get their name. But... this is an unusual beer for them. I think we'd give it, what, a 3.5 or 4 on the color?
Yeah, totally.
And the aroma, what do you think? Ooh, you can definitely smell those fruits.
Wow.
That's nice. Let's go 4 for that one. Let's go for the taste, man.
Cheers.
Cheers. Wow. That motherfucker's...
Ooh.
Kind of grabs you by the poo-poo.
I like that, dude. That caramel at the end, forget about it.
Yeah, that's nice. This is, according to this, what I'm reading here. Alcohol...
I feel like it'd say like a fucking... some nougat.
It does have a, kind of a caramelly thing at the end.
It's watery, but it's still chewy.
And the ABV, by the way, is almost to 12.
Holy Jesus.
So it's kind of strong, but it doesn't really feel it.
Taste the alcohol, yeah.
Yeah.
You?
Nope, not really, but I like it. It's very well balanced. Oh, yeah. On the mouthfeel, I don't remember if we did it on the last beer, but mouthfeel, I'd give it, you know, like a 3. Yeah. Whew. That alcohol's a little bit in there, though.
Sipping beer.
Yeah, definitely sipping beer. Very good sipping beer, as cigar beer.
It's got a really good flavor.
It's nice, though. I do like the flavor. I like that caramel at the end. Yeah, that's what I really pick up, that vanilla sugary feel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And for taste, I'd give that a 3.5. You're going to like 4, huh?
4. I really like that.
All right. Fine. Give this maybe a 3.5, 4 overall? Or
3.5, probably.
3.5 overall. Nice. Well, they've done it again, these combat guys. We got a lot of really good breweries in Houston. I love that about it.
Buffalo Bayou probably being the best, most adventurous.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I like that a lot of them are willing to branch out,
try
different things without going too crazy. I mean, you don't want to go all rogue voodoo where it's like, this is the pretzel strawberry, you know, Kool-Aid beer. What the fuck are you making?
Newton Catch It Raspberry.
That's pretty.
Believe me, it's organic.
I know. Try it, fucker.
Jump into the topic. Mm-hmm. Let's get turned into the topic. The reason we play Slash tonight is, as many of you know, probably everyone that listened to us, Guns N' Roses is back. After 20-something years, they said, let's bury the fucking hatchet.
When was the last time Slash played with Axl? Was it 20-something years ago?
Yeah, it was close to that.
Damn. And it's just because personal differences, right? He just said, I'm tired of your shit. And he said, I'm tired of yours. Fuck you.
And they don't like each other.
And who, I mean, I think I know the answer. I think it's fairly obvious, but I could be wrong. Who was the bigger artist solo? It was Slash, right? Because Axl did hardly anything, which doesn't really count.
No, I mean,
I don't count that.
Well, dude, I'll tell you what. Axl has some fucking... He had DJ Aspa, he had fucking Buckethead. And
definitely got some big dudes playing for him. Yeah, Bumblefoot. Yeah, Bumblefoot.
Right.
Bumblefoot, not Buckethead.
But, you're right there.
No, my fucking thing is, fuck with it. Like, I'm going to adjust, because I know you're blind, right? I'm just going to adjust the size, even though you haven't asked me to. Have you ever had that on your computer?
Nope.
Mike,
I know how to work my computer, so. You're like, fuck all of you.
Fucking kill me. So, we'll see when Slash left.
So.
Lattice,
But as you were saying, I mean, you clearly have a... I mean, I think we all love the old Guns N' Roses. No thing is in question of that.
You know what? I liked the first record. After that, I kind of checked out.
Was the first one Appetite for Destruction?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, sometimes those bands, you only remember that album, but it wasn't necessarily their first. Yeah, that was the classic, and then there's, you know, Use Your Illusion, all this other spaghetti incident, all this other horseshit. No, none of that stuff. When they guys started doing Patience, I'm like, okay, you're in your poison years. We're like, you're doing fucking. But you know what I mean? When they started, like, November Rain, we're basically just like, we're just doing ballads now. We're like Motley Crue. We're like fucking Poison, where they're in their ballad fucking years. Oh, well, sure. But the point is, it's like, it's not the hard rock. It's a big turn from the hard rock shit that they became really famous for. So I got a problem with that kind of stuff. I'm like, I don't need the ballady shit. I'm happy with you to make Appetite for Destruction Part 2. And I know that's what all the fans ask for and all the artists hate when it's like, don't label us off one album and make us play that album over and over again. You know, but that's the sound I dug, and then I never got that sound again after that album.
Right. You know? Well, I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, for you, we'll talk about me. We'll talk about you first.
Mm-hmm.
You're under the spotlight.
Okay.
So, I mean, what's your thought on Guns N' Roses to begin with? And then what's your thought on the reunion? Are you going to go? Do you want to go?
Well, I'm not going to go because it's too late. I mean, with a band that big, if you don't buy your tickets early on, you're going to get shit seats. And I'm too old to fucking get shit seats for a band that I'm not that big on. I mean, Guns N' Roses, that, like you said, that first album, Appetite for Destruction, it's fucking fantastic. Love that song. Love almost every song on it. Love that album. And I'm content to leave it at that. You know, I never got to see them live, and that's cool. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. But I think if they got all the original members back together for the show, right, and even if they were able to get them all together, it just wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't sound the same. I don't think they'd have the same energy. Axel, I really don't feel like you can depend on him. Even if he says, no, I'm all into this, I don't trust him not to be like, fuck, I don't feel like singing the second half of this song, and just hold the mic out and let the audience. I mean, he's notoriously a pain in the ass about playing live. I don't think you get the experience out of him that you expect, deserve, or want. And so what the fuck's the point of seeing that jackass and giving him more money to act like a fucking diva, which he's not? So I'm not concerned about it, but I love that fucking first album, and I'd be more content to just go home and play that.
What about Use Your Illusion?
I know of November Rain, I know all those songs, but I don't give a shit. They're not like that first album fucking rocked like a motherfucker from beginning to end. It was fantastic. And I'm like, that's what I like. And if that's the only album they'll ever make like that, I'll just listen to that. And I'm cool. I don't need to see him in concert. It's a shame that it took this long to get him back together after nobody gives a shit anymore. And although, you know, plenty of people do really, they're kind of flipping for this. I just don't feel like, I guess I'm too old for someone to just like snap their fingers and go, come here, you know, like I'm supposed to jump up and, you know, go, oh my God, thank you so much. You know, I was like, fuck you. You should have done this fucking 10 years ago.
You and I are from the same school in that, you know, when the first record came out, I went ape shit over it. Even before they were a household name. I think I read about them in Circus or Hip Parade or something like that.
Right.
And then they were going to come for this, like, show that was like Monsters of Rock type thing. And it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, Guns N' Roses, Faster Pussycat ended up playing. Guns N' Roses flaked out or whatever. Something happened.
Yeah, that shit's annoying, man.
But, dude, check out the bill. And I'm going off memory here. I don't remember every act. Mm-hmm. But it was like Faster Pussycat,
mm-hmm.
TNT.
Nice.
Gary Moore.
Nice.
Ace Frehley.
Cool.
Y&T.
Mm-hmm.
Rowdness.
Mm-hmm.
And there was somebody else there. I mean, this was all day.
Good collection of... And what year was this?
Fuck, yeah. It was like late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, wow. Yeah, then that was a great bill.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone was at
time to ever see Gary Moore live.
Yeah, and everyone was at the fucking like peak of their powers, man.
Oh, it's fucking awesome.
I was going to say it was like in like late 90s or something. I was like, okay, well, that's a little iffy.
But I loved the first record, but then it got so fucking wore out. I think I was totally wore out by the time the EP came out. And I thought, you don't fucking care anymore. And then they came out with You Could Be Mine for the Terminator soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, but then Use Your Illusion was such a big deal. They're going to do one part, and then they're going to do the second part. I never heard anything off there that just blew me away. I mean, November Rain, I kind of liked.
Uh-huh.
I liked the solo more than anything,
mm-hmm.
but everything else I heard kind of sucked. Or not sucked, it just didn't fucking blow me away, right?
Right.
So, to me, Guns N' Roses, to me, is the most overrated band in rock and roll history because they had one good record and right. They lived off that one fucking record.
Amen, yeah.
You don't hear people talking about Usual Illusion 1 and Usual Illusion 2 as being these fucking epic, great records.
Right.
You're, oh, I like that song, I like that song.
Right, exactly, it's true.
Solid records, you don't hear anybody saying that. So they break up after that. They put out Chinese Democracy, or Atzerodt and Friends, puts it up. Not a bad record. Not great, but not a bad record. I go see him a couple years ago, like I said. Axel could not hit a fucking note. He sounded fucking horrible. So this reunion, they've been talking about it. This isn't like Black Sabbath getting back together with Dio or Ozzy. This isn't like Van Halen getting back with David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar. It's none of that to me. It's like, I don't really fucking care, man.
Yeah.
I'm going. I got the like pre-sale thing to get best seats and whatever. I said, I don't fucking care.
Yeah. And I think you nailed it in that they're a classic example of a band, and there's not many of them, where they just made one good fucking album and have been living off of that ever since. Yeah, that's the thing. Granted, it was a killer fucking album. One of the greatest single albums, rock, hard rock albums of all time. I'll give you that.
Would they be the biggest one-hit wonder record-wise ever, maybe?
Yeah, in the sense that one hit, as in they had one hit record, rather than one hit song, is the way you normally think of it. But yeah, I mean, that's one record where it's like practically a flawless record, killer fucking record, even to this day still sounds as badass as it did back then. I mean, it holds up well. But it's like, after that, they never achieved that kind of sound again. They never hit that. They never topped it. They certainly, I don't think they even met it. So the amazing thing is that people still, I mean, they're lining up around the block. In California, I follow a couple of chicks, guitar chicks, out in California, who filmed themselves. I mean, she was Instagramming the whole time, and they stood in line all fucking day long. I think they camped out there, you know, they showed pictures of the tents outside of, like, Tower Records or something. They were just, like, back in the fucking 90s, and they're like, we're going to get tickets, dude. You know, we haven't done this in forever, in, like, 20-something years. I'm like, okay.
Club show they did?
I don't, maybe it was. It's out in L.A.
They did the...
like, in Hollywood. Whiskey. Yeah, I think that must have been what it was. So...
one or two nights, and then now they're doing stadiums. They're doing NRG Stadium here in Houston.
Oh, okay.
And I don't fucking care.
That's even worse, though, because it's like, if you think it sucks, you know, when you don't get a good seat at Toyota Center in a fucking basketball stadium, imagine a fucking football stadium, this giant ass, I mean, the acoustics are all wrong.
Power flight, because they get the shit together.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
Backfill can or whatever.
Right, that's the thing, and so I don't see, you know, you're totally right, the point of getting all excited about a band who totally coasts on their, rests on their laurels, man. Coasting by on one fucking hit album.
Yeah.
And I, the guy acts like such a fucking diva. I just can't stand it. I'm like, I don't know where you get off acting like you're the king shit. And you never even were the king shit. Not to me, you weren't. You had a great album, loved it. But it's not like you were fucking Ozzy, dude.
Yeah.
Ozzy had to earn being Ozzy by doing a shit ton of great albums.
I don't want to hammer Slash either, but... I think he is so overrated as a guitar player.
I mean, he's your classic blues guitarist.
He's good.
He's a blues rock, hard rock guitarist.
Would you say he's great? Is he one of your favorites? No.
Not at all. Not at all, dude.
Do you put him in the class of a Steve Vai or...
I wouldn't, you know, Zach I wouldn't Wild? Call him a shredder at all.
Even a Zach Wild?
I mean...
Zach Wild's not the greatest guitar player ever lived.
No, but he can, he's fucking fast, he's accurate.
Yeah, anything Zach does, I dig.
Yeah.
Or not everything, but a lot of stuff.
But I dig Zach, yeah. And speaking of which, that new Book of Shadows.
Would today, knowing that Book of Shadows 2 just came out.
I can't believe. Yeah, I just happened to see that. The other, I might have to pick it up myself or fucking listen to it when you have it. Let me listen to it, too. Because I'm curious how it sounds. I might want to pick it up. Because I fucking love Zach Wall's first Book of Shadows.
With Miles Kennedy, you know why?
What?
Miles Kennedy.
Okay, I know you're a huge Miles Kennedy fan, dude.
He can sing his ass off.
He is a good singer, I'll give you that.
Great fucking vocalist. I love Alter Bridge.
Yeah, they
I like
sound good.
Alter Bridge stuff a lot better than I like the Slash material.
Nice.
But getting a chance to hear Miles fucking sing his ass off, fucking buy it, dude.
I'm hip, Holmes.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm hip.
So, yeah, I'm just kind of curious to get what your thoughts were, because, you know, I didn't want to be the only negative Nancy saying, you know, I think not... I don't want to say Slash sucks. I don't want to say Guns N' Roses sucks.
No.
I think they're overhyped.
Hugely overrated. Oh, yeah. Good band, great band, but hugely overrated. They haven't had a great album since fucking Appetite for Destruction. Yeah. And so I totally agree with you on that. But, I mean, oh well. So that's cool. I mean, and especially...
You know who wrote most of the songs was Izzy Stradlin. That did
no shit. No shit. Izzy wrote
most of the fucking songs on Appetite.
Yeah, because all you need is fucking Slash to come in and just lay down, you know, the distortion and throw some riffs over it and you're done.
He was going to be a fucking poison.
Is he?
They rejected him for CC DeVille. I'm sure they rejected that. I mean... A little upset over that decision, but how weird would it have been had it been Tracy Guns and Axl Rose the way it was supposed to be?
Right, the Guns and Roses.
And Poison and says CC DeVille, you have Slash.
I would have been fine with it.
I wonder how big Slash would have got being in Poison. If he would have had to wear the makeup and the whole thing.
I think it's totally clear that it's one of those situations where, you know, you never know how things are going to work out. Serendipity, you know, comes into play. Yeah, and it's just blind luck the way they all kind of came together and formed the band that they formed to make the album that they made, and that's that. And I don't think, that they're ever going to achieve that kind of success again. And that's fine. I mean, I'm not crying over it. I mean, we've got a good album that we can cherish forever. I mean, that fucking, you're right. I mean, that Appetite for Destruction is fucking phenomenal. Great fucking tunes all across. I mean, look at so far we've been watching this, and they've played like three or this is like the third or fourth Guns N' Roses song.
And he's been playing. He's written a lot of music since then.
He's soloing like a motherfucker over Rocket Queen.
When we saw Velvet Revolver years ago, how much Guns N' Roses did it play? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I do remember not being impressed with Velvet Revolver.
Oh god, they're fucking horrible. It was one of the worst performances I can remember in recent memory.
Yeah.
That we paid for. Because when we were bummed out, it was supposed to be Maiden.
Right.
And we got fucking Velvet Revolver. It's like
big difference, big letdown.
Oh, fuck it. At night and fucking day, man.
It's like they could have just put in a local.
Fucking orange.
They could have just put in a local fucking Battle of the Bands, fucking high school band or something.
Scott Whelan, oh man. I respected him so much before I saw him live. After that, I was like, oh god, this guy's a horrible frontman.
Yeah.
And all I hear is, oh, he's the greatest front man ever. It's like, oh, really? Not with Velvet Revolver.
Yeah, my brother fucking loves him. At least I think he does. And I'm like,
he was.
Good vocalist and everything. But yeah, weird fucking stage presence. At least with Velvet Revolver, he was. I don't know what he was like with the other bands. But he was weird. He fucking sounded kind of erratic. And the vocals, I mean, he's like, anybody can sing that. I mean, it's not. He wasn't lending anything so unique and amazing to the process that I was like, wow, thank God for that.
I never saw him with STP, so I don't know. But.
Certainly love STP's music, but yeah, I don't, live, for all we know, the live show was just a pain in the ass to listen to. I don't know.
So,
well, where do we go from here, Paisan?
I tell you what, I don't know if we have a topic, but let's touch on AC/DC. We did a little bit last show, but it kept on getting interrupted by
idiots.
Someone... Perfect. Idiots. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think? Do you think the conspiracy theory is true that Brian got pushed out just because of age and maybe he was done? Or
I don't know. I don't know what the story is. I don't.
Whatever it is Angus wants to continue and maybe he thought Brian was done, so he pushed him out. They're trying to find someone younger to do it.
I have to think that if Angus.
You go for the Kiss model.
Well, I have to think that if Angus is trying to push through, that maybe it's related to losing Malcolm. It's part of his sort of grieving process to sort of, he feels better doing what they would have done had he lived, and that kind of thing.
Do you think they need the money?
No, I don't think it's about money at all. That's why I don't think it's about money at all. I think it's about, this is the way I'm going to feel better about having lost my brother if I can go out and do what we used to do together and sort of let...
He's got the dementia thing.
Right, but just sort of let him go that way, right? Yeah, sorry, I don't mean to... Yeah, he kind of almost is, but you're right, technically no. And so, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, time, perhaps, but the point is he's probably not going to be back playing in the band ever again.
No, I don't think so.
And if that's so, then like I said, this is maybe Angus's way to sort of make peace with that sort of thing. And if he needs that as part of a grieving process, great. But by the same token, if Brian is so sick or whatever that he can't keep going because he has a vocal cord, I know you don't think that that's a true story. or whatever it is, or some sort of medical thing. Yeah. If you don't think that's really true, it's just a cover story.
Rumors in the news.
Oh, okay. But my point is, if it's not true, and if it really is just he's because they just have problems and he doesn't want to keep going, my thing is, it's like, by the same token, you know, you feel, Angus, that you need to do this to feel better, if that's so. You know, I respect also the guy that says, I just can't do it anymore. Like Neil Peart. He just said, you know what, I can't do touring, man. I'm too fucking old for this, and I just don't want to be away from, you know, as long as I have to be from where I want to be. I just can't do it, and I don't have to. I got plenty of money and prestige, so why not just bow out and be done with it?
But don't you find the AC/DC story a little bit far-fetched in that if he plays loud, we can't give him hearing protection to save his ears. If he continues to sing in front of this band, he's done. He could lose his hearing for life.
Uh-huh.
I don't really buy that.
Okay.
That seems far-fetched, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's possible that that's...
hearing protection that he could use that would save his hearing to where he could still perform.
Who knows?
I think he's done.
Yeah, I mean, like I said...
I don't know if he went to them and said, hey, release this, or if they said, Brian's not quite cutting it the way we like it, so I want to find someone else.
Right. I mean, who's to say how it really played out, but yeah, it makes sense that maybe... For whatever reason, if any of them decided, I don't know, I can do this anymore, you know, and said I needed to go, then I don't think anyone would stop them. I don't think anyone would feel bad about letting them go, as in, like, if you need to feel better or whatever, and take
it's a mutual thing.
Then that's cool. Obviously, there's two people that are the main people in the band, as far as we probably can't do without them. And that is, one is, of course, Angus, and two, Brian Johnson, the sound of AC/DC. So, and if Johnson says, I need to take 2 months vacation to kind of rest before I consider re-going, I'd be like, that's fine, take it.
Right.
We'll work around it. If you've made contractual agreements like, oh, we were going to be there in 2 weeks, but now we won't because you're sick, you know, that's going to cost us money or whatever, that shit happens. Yeah, you just go, oh, well, and you bite the bullet, and that's fine. But to just sort of willfully say, no, fuck you, we don't need you, we're going to fucking do this without you with some other motherfucker in your place. It's like, that just sounds like you're kind of being a dick about it, you know? Yeah, and my thing is, it's like, you know, let people do what they got to do. If he feels sick or whatever, or scared or whatever, doesn't want to go on stage and do this anymore, fucking let him. Go then. And the way I see it is, if I'm losing a big member like that, anything I put together wouldn't be AC/DC now. It'd be Angus Young's AC/DC or something. I mean, that's how these bands get these fragmented names.
Original member now.
Right, and that's how these bands get these fragmented names and lineups.
Brian Johnson was an original.
Right.
He was the closest to... Where they
have, he's an integral part of their sound. I mean, now, certainly. Right. So, I mean, you can't have AC/DC and not have him singing the fucking tunes. I mean, you're not ever going to get fucking Bon Scott back, so you don't have a choice. I mean, that's the sound of AC/DC that everybody knows.
So, let me pose this question to you, and then we'll move on to our classics and so forth. If you could pick anyone to front AC/DC, who would it be?
Fuck, man, I don't even know who could do the bill. Jim Brewer? No, I don't know. I mean, I can't think of anyone. Obviously, we find someone who's got a higher-up kind of a voice who can scream like a motherfucker. That's really all it is. I mean, it's easy to be melodic, I think. I think most singers can carry a tune. That's part of their job. So just a matter of finding guys that kind of presence. But even when we saw him, even if he was already starting to feel that fatigue,
yeah,
he fucking was great, man. I thought Brian Johnson sounded good. Awesome. He looked good. He did all this amount of running around and, you know, whatever those guys have to do. And I didn't feel like I was being cheated out of a performance. So I was happy with it. And if he can keep that up, great. If he can't, then like I said, it would be no different than if, you know, one of your main guys said, hey, I've got the flu or something. I'm going to have to drop out of the tour for a month. And they have to just go on hiatus or whatever.
Yeah.
That shit happens, man.
They could. They're big enough to do that.
Yeah. And that shit happens. So people understand. You know,
do you have a guy in mind? No.
No, I can't think of anyone who I think
what about
has.
Miles Kennedy?
I can't think. It'd have to be somebody basically like.
Did you sing high?
Kenny? I mean, okay. I mean, I'd listen to the audition or whatever, so you like see what I think. I mean, what do I
saw like Mark Sparacci kind of like Crocus.
Oh, okay. A screamer. Don't you kind of need a screamer, basically?
Too, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of need a screamer, right? Well, yeah, he could do the Brian Johnson as well as the Bon Scott stuff.
Cool.
Miles's problem is his voice is too smooth. It's not rough enough. He could probably pull it off, and he's got a name.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of smooth. Even like a Kelly Hansen that sing for Hurricane,
right?
Now singing for Foreigner.
Right, right. That's a good point.
You know, Kelly Hansen could probably be a guy, but he doesn't have that gruffness of, like, Bon Scott.
Right.
Or what about the guy from Airborne?
I mean, certainly they've been grooming themselves for years to basically replace AC/DC. It's worth a shot. I mean, then I guess it would be... I mean, at that point, it's kind of an... Yeah, yeah.
What do you want to plug?
Whatever you think sounds good. For those about to rock, we salute you. No, joke.
Tell you what. The middle of Munchkin and I went down to California here a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
What's that flashlight? Hold it. And we went to Magic Mountain. And believe it or not, there was a video by Airborne playing on a video screen in front of this one ride. It was like a fucking real fast ride, right?
Nice.
It's called Live It Up. It was off their second record. And these motherfuckers in their funk come along. Black Dog Barking. See how good I am? I can fucking pull this shit out.
Nice.
Fucking talented. No, but anyway, this song was playing on the big screen in front of this ride, and I'm looking at it, it's like, it's fucking Airborne. I look at the Mel Munch, it's like, your daddy talked to that guy, the singer guy.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, oh, dude, that's cool. And then just fucking blew me off. I was like, I'm like trying to impress you, and I'm getting blown off.
That's how it is, Holmes. Totally shitty.
So, let's check out some Airborne. Those are my thoughts for, like, I mean, fuck, just get Udo Dirk Schneider Holmes.
Exactly, Holmes. That would be awesome. Like, what the fuck? Nobody could see him.
Can you imagine Udo singing fucking Whole Lot of Roses?
I see him singing TNT.
Oi!
Tony Harnell?
Oi!
Yeah.
I was singing Tony Harnell. You were talking about the song.
Right.
He's with Skid Row.
Right, that could work.
Plus Sebastian Bach goes back, right. Which is rumored. You never know.
You never do.
You never, never know. So, let's move on to the classics, Mr. Jake.
Let's do it.
Let's tell you what. Why don't you bend over? I tell you what, I want to bring this up on our next show. And if we remember past our drunken stupor tonight, Genghis is falling so bad.
Yeah, what?
Station.
Mm-hmm.
You got your station on.
Right. So.
How many times are we going to tell you to stop smoking so much?
I don't smoke.
What?
I smoke that bad.
Hi.
Okay. What's your point of interruption? That's John Shelby. He's not here.
He's
right.
I'm good.
I think he's okay.
Sounds cool.
It's fine. I think he's fine.
Excellent.
But anyway, so, you know, I want to bring this up just because it's been kind of weird. I mentioned it to you. I've been on a total classic rock kick.
Totally.
Classic rock. Oh, the classic of the show, and I try to keep it metal-ish without getting too classic rockish.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I picked up a Tommy Bolin record. Have you ever heard that song, Teaser?
No.
He had a record called Teaser. The Crew covered it back in the 90s.
Ah.
Fucking killer song, but Tommy Bolin played with some big names back in the day, don't you know?
I do know. He was a big shot.
Play with the Purple Holmes.
Nice, I'm hit.
So I'll tell you what, let's play some Tommy Bolin Teaser.
Thinking if we're going to talk about guitarists, especially flashy guitarists, and I mean, here's kind of Slash and Axl Rose put together in a sense, you know, the old school version. How about a little Ted Nugent?
Fuck, dude, you know what? I've been on a Nugent kick. I bought his first record. You know that song? Hey, baby!
Uh-huh.
I love that, dude. A little Stranglehold.
I don't know what the fuck you're
doing. He bought Little Miss Dangerous.
I liked that song back when it was on Miami Vice. And remember, he was the fucking guest star on Miami Vice. I mean, back then, I was like, damn, this is crazy. He's all over the place.
You got some Nugent for him?
Yeah, I said we should do some little Ted Nugent. That's what I'm thinking. How about a little Tied Up in Love?
Fucking love that song, dude. Brian Howell on vocalist and went to join over the Bad Company over there.
Oh, yeah.
Before Roger Slough.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking A, dude. You got me. You got me running home.
We'll be right back.
What about picking the show? You got anything up your sleeve?
Yeah, I've been jamming to this band. They're really great. I know that, you know, I'm a huge prog fan, and you probably listen to more prog from me than you probably want to, but I really am digging this new band. They're actually they're French Tunisian, so they're actually from like Northern Africa.
French Romanian.
Comanche Indian. That's been on all weekend. I've been watching the shit out of. Yeah, and old girl had never seen Fletch before, so she had to watch it. And I was like, tell me that. Yeah, and I'm like, tell me this isn't a fucking classic movie.
I wish she was like, this sucks.
You know how chicks are. They never dig the. They don't know how to dig the cool movies.
Yeah, I don't think why much into Fletch.
That's right. Oh, well, it's probably that old hard ass Hanrahan. That's right, that old petter ass Hanrahan. Petter ass.
Amazing amount of good condensed window.
That's right. Now, prep that Pfister valve with some 40 weight oil. And, what is it? That's right. It's like, give me some antifreeze, preferably Quaker State. No.
Moon River.
Make that Preston. It's like, you ever do time, Doc?
They'll fist up their neck.
Fucking.
Call it back to Fletch.
Fucking love that movie. Love that fucking movie. All right. Anyway, these guys are Franco-Tunisian, and so they're doing.
It says made up. We're making up a race.
They're doing what they call Oriental prog, which is funny. I'm like, I thought Oriental was like one, not PC, but two.
So that's Tracy. There's Viking metal, now there's Oriental prog.
That's right. Or they call it Oriental metal. Oriental metal. And I'm like, I thought Oriental was like Asian. They're not Asian, but anyway.
Close enough, Rob.
The thing is,
closer than you.
The thing is, it sounds fucking awesome, dude. Oh, nice. Yeah, there's a heavier tune on the album called "The Needle," which has got some like Symphony X style riffing, which sounds really fucking cool. They're really good, and I think you guys will dig it. So I want you to take a listen, see what you think. The lead vocalist guy, he sounds like Ted Leonard, the guy from Enchant. He's got that kind of style voice, and they got that nice exotic kind of Arabic sort of, you know, flourish to the melodies, which sounds really cool. So, anyway, I think you guys will dig them. Give them a listen.
Yeah, there was a band called Eurasia I really fucking dug that had the kind of Middle Eastern type feel to it, the music and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Well, I want to bring up something. This is one of my favorite guitar players. I have a lot of them. He's one of my bloody favorites. He's got a new project. He left one of my favorite German brands. Because he's Russian, right?
Uh-huh.
Can't get it on, right?
Uh-huh.
But Victor Smolsky, as many of you know, left Rage a year or so ago? About a year ago.
Yep, and I know you're a huge fucking fan of Rage. Always been a huge Rage fan.
And Smolsky is a big part of that, man, because his fucking guitar playing is fucking phenomenal.
He's a fucking shred master, dude.
Oh, dude, he'll get into these fucking little rip things. And you're fucking, I mean, I swear to God, you be in your car, you listen, and your dick just like, hello? So I'd be like, Jerry Lewis, you get it hard on the phone,
might as well just jam, I guess.
Right? But,
yeah, that motherfucker can play like a motherfucker.
I played you something tonight, and I was looking like a fucking moron in front of you and wifey.
You were jamming. You were jamming, dude. It's good stuff.
The music took over.
I'm hip.
And I look like a fucking idiot, but he gets these little, like, dun 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 and all these crazy weird ripping things.
Yeah.
Before he even gets to the solo.
Sure. Like,
when are you going to get to the solo?
Fucker knows how to...
Sorry, let's just go back to where you were.
He knows how to groove, dude. He doesn't lay down a really sweet groove, man.
The fucking groove will get your dick hot in a second. I mean, it's a cure, metal cure to Viagra.
I think that's the fourth time you mentioned dick, so let's maybe move on.
Thank God, John.
It's time to freak me out.
Well, so many, this brand new record's called Czar. The band's called Almanac. And it's kind of an interesting thing because he's got three vocalists. He's got David Redman from Pink Cream.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got Andy B. Frank from Brainstorm.
Nice.
You're like, dude, I know that voice. Who is that? Who is that?
Yeah.
Andy,
that's fucking Andy B. Frank. That's right.
And then there's a chick, I forget her name and what band she's from. Not as familiar with her music, mm-hmm. but the other two guys, man, I know them pretty well.
Nice.
But I tell you what, we'll do the song that she does a duet with David Redman. Let's do Reign of Madness.
Nice.
You get a taste of this almanac because these cats, it's a very good record. It's going to be interesting. I almost want to do those, like, fucking, head-to-head things. Like,
yeah.
Do Rage versus Almanac. Mm. Which record's better? Because Rage's new record's about to come out, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So, let's check it out. A little bit of Almanac.
Darkness all around. They see the sky open up.
That sounded sweet, Holmes. Right,
fucking idea.
Yeah. And I figure...
Hey, Holmes.
And you know, he's thinking, he's like, I'm in a new band, and you know...
You suck.
I'm due.
He's Russian. He's like Victor Shemotsky.
And you mean new band?
And new potatoes for vodka.
And I'm due.
I'm due. I'm due for vodka. And new music for... To rub Phoebe's face in my music with my Russian potatoes. What are you talking about?
Just,
I don't know. I just want to rub music in Phoebe's face.
I'm pretty sure we're not going to get a Humanitas Award or Nobel Peace Prize Award. No, oh, okay. That's too bad.
Which is sad.
Yeah, that really is, because they were a serious trio, dude.
Fuck yeah, dude. Let's, before we shut this fucker down, I'm going to play my favorite Rage song.
Let's do it.
The song's called Down.
Nice.
You're going down.
Kids out there in La La Land.
As always, we want you to listen to this great interview we got in store for you. We have big names, I tell you, Tom.
Big, the biggest, Jerry.
Big names. Well, I'll go to Mindy's afterwards, I promise.
All right, you want to go to Mindy's? I'll take you to Mindy's.
Let's go. Fucking Joel, Jerry. So, a gold interview, a dinner at Mindy's, a soup at Mindy's. Soup. We're going to get soup.
Fine.
You get a little soup. Kevin Bacon will be there.
Exactly.
Banya.
Yeah. Maybe even the end of this show will be there.
Yentl.
Sure.
So, anyway, we want to thank you for listening as always, and we want to give you two big...
Holds up.
Hi, this is Mike Howe from Metal Church, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
Rights Your Own Live with Ragman, mano e mano, with a guy that we haven't heard from in a while. A great vocalist, Mr. Mike Howell from Middle Church. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm great, Ragman. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Let me ask you this, and I'm sure you've been asked a million times. Did you ever think in a million years, or it's been 21, let's just go 21, that you'd be saying, this is Mike Howell from Metal Church again?
I'd never thought I ever would.
You know, it's funny how things come around. We talk to new bands as well as some older guys have, you know, split or what have you, and a lot of them say, you know, it's never going to happen, never going to happen, but never say never.
That's right, and stranger things have happened is the other term.
Yes, sir, exactly. Well, I know you've got the, you've been asked this a bunch, but kind of tell us about how you got back in the fold with Kurt. From what I understand, he made a phone call, played you some tunes, and, you know, it got together pretty quick, but I don't think it was probably that easy. But how would, I guess, a quick version of how this thing all came back together for you?
Yeah, that was the condensed version. He called me, got a hold of me around the fall of 2014 and proposed coming back because the old singer Ronnie had left the band and he didn't have it in him to carry on and find a fourth singer for Metal Church. So, you know, the only thing left for him to do was reach out to me and see if I'd be interested or not. And so that's what he did. And, you know, we... Of course, at first I was like, "No, I'm done," and I meant it. But you know, Kurt is a great guy and an old friend of mine, and you know, we had many conversations over a period of time about the way how things would be different, and the things that drove me away from the music business would no longer exist. And so, you know, his power of persuasion was good. You know, Kurt Banner is a great persuader. So. You know, we had many conversations about taking it slow and making sure it was right and making sure that we were going to have a product, you know, a new Metal Church record that would, you know, we could be proud of and it would stand up today, you know, to something that was just as powerful as anything we've done. And through that process and taking it slow and going back and forth with him sending me songs and then me coming up to his place and putting melodies to it and, you know, rearranging songs and making the songs, you know, what they are today, we are at the spot now. And so, like I was saying, we wanted to make sure everything was the way we envisioned it and make the best possible record we could. And that took a little over a year, but we were very happy to say that we're very proud of what we've done. And now we're taking it to the people.
Nice. And it's good to, especially getting back after being gone for so long and working, you definitely, I mean, you guys had a nice era, a really strong era for Metal Church, and you don't want to come back and half-ass it, so to speak. So I'm glad you guys took your time with it and came out with a product you're happy with and the fans are definitely going to be happy with.
Well, I appreciate that, yeah. And, you know, it's one thing to come back, but if you know, everyone's going to have their microscopes out and you know, and see how you do, and so that's what we wanted to make sure that we had firmed up before we released anything.
So when you left in 94, you said you just kind of said, I'm done with the music industry. Can I ask you, you know, what you've been up to for the last 20 years?
I've been raising two boys and living the domestic lifestyle that most people do.
Well, you know, it's kind of cool because you always wonder, being a fan, you always think, well, he's a great vocalist. He's just going to do something else. You know, he's going to stay singing or doing something like that. But, you know, the older we get, you kind of realize that, you know, hey, these guys got to make ends meet somehow. If they're not doing music, and, you know, the music industry isn't what it used to be either. So everybody's got, you know, doing other things. I know we talked to Dave Henseling with King Cobra. I don't know if you know Dave, but he's into, like, computers and programming and stuff like that, and it's kind of interesting. And he keeps on playing the music, but, you know, he's got this other career, and the music's almost sort of a hobby now from where it was his main deal, you know?
Sure, yeah. Well, that's understandable. But for me, you know, when I left Metal Church, it wasn't, I didn't leave Metal Church because I didn't like being in Metal Church anymore. I actually loved being in Metal Church, and I was very proud of what we had accomplished in Metal Church. I left Metal Church with a heavy heart, you know, because it was something I loved. And it was just the outside forces, management and record companies and all these other things that just kind of ruined it for me and the rest of the guys. So stepping away from Metal Church was a very sad day. And, you know, people say, why didn't you do other things? And I say, Metal Church is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be the singer for Metal Church. And if I couldn't do that, you know, I wasn't looking for another outlet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that time was such a hard time, especially for a metal band, to try to do anything. You guys make it to 94. That's a major accomplishment, and still being signed to a major label. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree, and I appreciate that.
Well, let's jump into the new record, and let's talk a little bit about your new label, because I really like these guys. They're bringing some past artists back to the forefront, and it's really cool what they're doing. Rat Pack Records, they actually released a record on the 25th of March. How do you like dealing with Rat Pack? How's it different than back in the day?
Well, I love dealing with Rat Pack and Joe O'Brien at Rat Pack and all his help at Rat Pack. They're a great label. They're a small label, obviously, but we know exactly what they're doing for us and how hard they're working for us. And it shows that they care about us and they're trying their best. So that means a lot to Kurt and I and the band, you know, to be able to see what your record company is doing for you. And I could call Joe at any time and talk to him and see what's going on and voice my concerns or my happiness, all that stuff. So that's a great thing to have compared to the old days where you were lost in a huge record company that you had no idea if they even knew that you were on their label and if they even cared about you at all. And there was no one you could call to talk to and find these kind of answers out. So yeah, it's totally different nowadays, and I'm very happy with it.
Well, the album 11 has a very, to me, classic Metal Church feel to it, and that's what drew me to it early in. Going in, did you guys, or I guess you, Kurt, had some riffs, but, you know, how much was of this was older material, if any, or was it all new stuff that you guys put together?
Oh, it was completely brand new, and you know, I think what it is, you know, we really felt, like I said, there was some unfinished business from Hanging the Balance onward. You know, we didn't break up and give it up because we felt we were on a downward spiral of writing and creativity. We broke up because of the business. So this is, you know, we feel very lucky to have been able to pick it back up at this time of our lives and start getting back together and start writing songs that reflect where we could have possibly carried on from those days. And, you know, it's a testament to Kurt's capability and songwriting skills that he's still writing awesome, fresh, you know, riffs. And then we got together and the chemistry between us, that was the amazing part, is the chemistry still was there. And then it was there in the absence of all the outside pressures that were there in the 90s, early 90s, of management and record companies and all these, you know, people trying to push us in directions we didn't want to be. So this time around, we said we're going to write the songs just having fun. If we're not having fun writing the songs, then it will be for nothing. So we went in, creatively had fun doing it, and we wrote the songs, recorded the songs, and mixed the songs, and said, this is the first record that Kurt and I have ever written together, performed together, and mixed, and said, this is exactly what we feel Metal Church should sound like and be. So we're very proud of that fact, and we're very happy. It's kind of a closure that we could have put an album out in our lifetime that we can say, this is all us, bad, good, or whatever, and we can't blame any outside influences or others on things that we're not happy with. So that's a very huge thing to us.
Oh, yeah, man. And again, it really comes off for a fan, a listener, on how well-structured the songs are. They're catchy. They're brutal at points, too.
Yeah.
I want to bring up a song that the first one that's just really kicked my ass, Sky Falls In. and kind of a mid-tempo thing. And, man, I love that song. Do you have a story of how that song came together for you?
We wanted to really be spontaneous and organic in our writing this time around. We didn't want to overthink. We just wanted to let the creative juices flow. And Kurt sent me, you know, a batch of about, I don't know, 7 or 8 songs the first go round. With when I said, all right, let's give this a try, he went into his studio and he had a creative spurt, so to speak, and wrote 6 or 7 songs and sent them to me and said, what do you think of these? And I said, these riffs are awesome. Carry on. And he went back in and wrote a bunch more. And then once we had this a pile of songs, basic song structure, I went up to his studio and we went through them one by one, putting the microphone up and working out melodies and lyrics and rearranging them to fit the way the flow of our songwriting was going. And So Sky Falls In was just part of the same, we're just getting in there singing melodies over it, and whatever comes out, and we're going to build on that. And I think that was a really great technique for us this time, not overthinking things and just coming from the heart.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah, I could definitely see that one being a second single. I don't know what y'all picked so far, but that is definitely one for me that I really, really dig. Another one I want to ask you about was It Waits, and I wanted to kind of ask you what the lyrical plot line was behind that song. I know there's, I don't know if you guys are into horror movies, but there was a horror movie a while back called It Waits, and it back dating myself very much in the late 70s, It's Alive and stuff like that, so...
Yeah.
Thank you.
I guess I didn't know that, but I guess, you know, I'm sure that that makes sense, of course. You know, it's a very mystical song, and, you know, it's the lyrics are very nebulous, and that's what we wanted to do on purpose, you know. It's like, what is it that waits? What it waits for you? It could mean many different things for everyone, you know. So what is it that is waiting for you? Is it good, bad? Is it evil? Is it, yeah, what is it? So that's exactly how we wanted to approach that song, is very, you know, leave it open-ended, and you can decide for yourself what's waiting for you.
There you go, man. I got to ask you about this, because this is the lead single, No Tomorrow, and the video is really cool, and you're in, it looks like one of these nuclear silos or something. Where did you guys film that, and did you guys have any creative concept behind what you wanted to do for the video, or was it all pretty much Rat Pack hired and said, hey, we kind of want a band video, and here's our thoughts?
Yeah, well, all of that, you know, we were, you know, we didn't have a huge budget, and the nuclear facility is up in Selma, Washington, which is very close to where Kurt lives in Aberdeen, and it was just happened to be one of those lucky things for us. It's like Jamie Chamberlain of Black Dahlia Films is a Seattle guy, and he's done some stuff, and our Joe O'Brien at the record company had connections with him. And he said, why don't we give Jamie a try at this and use that location? It seems like a perfect place to for a No Tomorrow kind of feel. And, you know, honestly, we just said that sounds like a cool concept. Let's give it a go and see how it comes out. And it was pretty much just, we got lucky with that one, I think. You know, it was a great idea. It was a great location, and they brought in drones and brought in cameras, and we just shot, and Jamie did a great job, and we're very happy with the end result.
Oh, yeah, I agree, man. It looks really, really sharp, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's something else I find interesting with bands, and I know some guys put a lot of thought into it, and other guys don't put as much thought into it, but track listing. And I'll just be honest with you, your record about the third, fourth song in, man, I was hooked, and I just thought it got stronger and stronger and stronger as the album went, as you finish up with Supper Fools. As far as track listing is concerned, did you guys have a big part? It sounds like you guys pretty much had the reins for the whole thing, but did y'all put a lot of thought into the track listing?
We put a lot of thought into it, yes. We put a lot of thought into everything about the album. You know, we're old school, and Kurt's very old school, and he's awesome like that. And, you know, we definitely had conversations about track listing and how, you know, it's a tale. It's a piece of artwork, and what flows to what song, just like you put together a set list live, you know. It's the same thing. So, yeah, we're still looking at our songs as a piece of artwork and putting them together in an order that makes sense to us and flows and feels good. And, yeah, I really like the way it flows as well. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Let me ask you this. As far as tracks, and I know this is all fairly new, but was there a song during the writing process that you thought maybe this won't work, and you worked and worked and worked on it, and then it came out better than you expected? That maybe it's a favorite song or something like that? Or
Yeah, there are songs. I mean, there's lots of examples of that, you know, and I have to say Reset was a big one like that when I first heard the riff and was like, yeah, that's a cool riff and all, but, you know, how are we going to make that special? And when I got the melodies coming out of me and we put the lyrics down and it came about, that one, when I first heard just the riffing and just the song, yeah, I was like, oh, that one's going to be okay. But, yeah, of course, that's the magic of writing music and creating, is, like, you never know what's going to happen to a song until you put melodies on it and lyrics on it, and that's what makes it very exciting and a beautiful process.
a great song to start the record, and just a great title because it's kind of a reset. You're picking up back from 94, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a statement, obviously. It's our band statement. So
nice.
We're very happy with the way that came out, and that's why it's number one on the track.
Perfect, man. Well, before we get away from the record real quick, the album cover, I really dig the album cover. It brings back kind of the old school metal church vibe with the guitar on the front and the smoke and everything. Did you guys have a lot of creative input on how you were going to do the cover?
Yeah, everything. Yeah, we have complete control on every aspect of the record, making of the songs, making of the tracks, we have every control of everything, and that's what we're very happy with, and what we're, you know, is what makes us a band and here today is that we have that control. And, you know, Joe O'Brien at Rat Pack Records is just a huge fan and works super hard for us, and we make the record, give it to him, and he sells it, and he's our cheerleader, and he's out there, you know, promoting it and doing all he can to sell our record. But yeah, when it comes down to it, Kurt and I made the record, and the band played on it, and he's a very creative guy, and he made that record cover himself. So yeah, I really like it a lot.
I do too. And I got to bring up maybe a sore spot, the Hanging in the Balance cover. Now, whose idea was that, and were they shot afterwards?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is the part of the conversation where I say, why did you leave the band, Mike Howe? And I say, well, all those things about record companies and management and control, you know, trying to mess with us as artists, and not just let us be artists and tell, you know, and create the songs and create the album work and all that. This was a album cover that was presented to me and the band by our management, and I hated it. So I hated it. I loathed it. And it was embarrassing to me, and I said, I do not like this. And, you know, management company, this is part, you know, management company said, well, this is what we're going to use. And when I was 20-something years old in this metal church band, it was fractured on business ideas. And, you know, we were too young, and we didn't stand up for ourselves and what we believed. And when you're that young and you have a management company that's, you know, got an upper hand on you, and they you know, they think they know better than you, and they force things upon you, that you're going to be in trouble. And that's what happened to Metal Church, is we couldn't stand up and say no. I couldn't stand up and say no. I should have in hindsight, but I didn't. And that's why I left the band, because it was too much out of our control.
Yeah, it's funny. If you kind of think of some of the covers that came out in that era, you were just wondering, you know, what happened here. You're like, what? I don't understand. It is a metal band. There's like some weird cartoon character on the cover. Now,
right.
You guys weren't the only victims.
Right. So if you want to, I haven't said his name ever in an interview yet, but if you want to know who should be shot, the guy's name is Kenny Laguna. But not literally shot. I am not advocating.
We don't advocate violence on this show.
No, not literally.
Very good. Well, hey, man, before I let you go here, as far as tour plans go, what's on the forefront as far as touring?
Well, we just wrapped up, you know, 3-week stint over in New England and Midwest, and we're going to be heading out here another couple weeks over to Europe and do some festivals in Germany and Holland and around there. And we're working on some dates for June possibly, and then we're going to head back over in July to Europe and do a bunch more dates, and then back in August over in Europe, more dates, more festivals. There's a lot of festivals that happen over in Europe over the summer, heavy metal festivals, and so we're on a bunch of those, and we're going to fill in dates around those. And then we're looking to, you know, in the fall, get back to the States and do some more shows in the States.
Nice. As far as the set list goes, what do you have in mind for the set list? Is it concentrating more on the new material, or are you going to, I'm sure you're going to have to sprinkle in some of the older classic stuff, but are you going to just focus on stuff from your era for the majority of it?
Well, Kurt came to me and said, Mike Howe, you know, you're coming back, and I'd really like you to tell me what you'd like to play in the set. And that's what I did. I sat down and picked out a bunch of songs that Mike Howe enjoyed playing when he was in the band in the Mike Howe era, and then we have like three other songs from the Dave Wayne era, and that's it. So it's mostly Mike Howe stuff.
Nice, nice. Well, Mike, before we let you go, is there something you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Well, I would just like to thank them very much for still being out there and supporting Metal Church, you know, 23 years later, actually, for me. And if it weren't for them, obviously, we wouldn't be able to do this, and I'm totally grateful and thankful to them. And I hope to see them out in a club or anywhere we're playing and shake hands and say thanks right to their face.
Awesome. Well, Mike, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on the RightToRock.com. And we want to tell the fans to go out and grab Metal Church's 11 out on March 25th on Rat Pack Records. It's a killer record, man. You will not be disappointed. Mike, thanks so much for your time. Great talking to you, sir.
Ragman, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.